Hello and welcome to the fifth edition of the Big River Solutions podcast. I'm Nikki Lloyd-Williams and today I'm joined by Christine Edwards and Neil Hutton. Today we're discussing category vision. In the last episode, we explored category management, its role and its relevance. In this episode, it's all about category vision. If category management is a historical review of what has happened, category development is looking to the future, how to keep abreast of trends and remain relevant. So, Neil, if I can direct the first question to you. So you have a category vision, what should you do with it?
So if you've got your category vision and you've done all the hard work and people have been involved throughout the business, you should end up with five or six, or perhaps four or five, nice big ideas or big strategies that you can then hang the rest of your business around for the next few years.
I think the thing that has happened with category visions historically is there is an absolute shed load of work that you do to create one. And then when people have actually created it, it's sort of, well, you know, what do we do with it now? So you look at many glossy presentations that have got a beautiful phrase. And then, as Neil says, four or five growth opportunities hanging off it. And that's really all they do with it. They've invested so much time, so much resource in actually getting to that point. And then there is an element of, yes, so what do we do?
But usually as part of the project, you will have defined example tactics.
Yeah.
That you can then bring that vision alive. So for instance, if one of the drivers is around trading up to premium products, and very often they are, the tactics that would come out with it would give you a lead on the kinds of promotions and the kinds of activities you should run to encourage people to trial and then adopt those premium products.
Yeah. And I mean, another opportunity that you could identify is that there is a gap in the range that's available and that maybe you need to actually create a new part of your portfolio that delivers against the needs and trends that have been identified that currently aren't being covered. So in some instances, that is either repacking into a different format because actually maybe something that you've got as a take-home pack needs to be an on-the-go pack, or it might be completely create a new segment for your category because you can see that your category needs a healthier area or a child-oriented area or some other demographic that your category doesn't yet fulfil.
I think this is why it's so important that a category vision is adopted by the cross-functional, the commercial team, yeah. Because it needs to then feed the NPD program, the brand planning program, and you know it's not a short-term process. This is not a fixing something for the next financial cycle. It's about feeding into the process for the next 3 or 4 years.
I would actually challenge you slightly, Neil, and say that you know there is even a broader set of people that need to be on board with it because you know finance guys might have to understand that for a short period of time you do not apply the same financial measures to something, or the supply chain guys need to understand that you know they're going to have to invest a new machinery or carry stock in a different way. So I would even say it really should be organisation-wide. And then, of course, I mean, a category vision, because it may fundamentally change some aspects of your business, you know, it really has to be across the whole organisation, right from the top all the way down. And really, it is not just one person's job. You know, everybody needs to deliver against the elements of the category.
I think in
vision.
Reality, Christine, I think it can be very difficult to get everyone on board across the company, because very often it is category teams or sales teams that take on a category vision project.
Yeah.
And it doesn't become the preserve of the overall business. So I think,
yes.
I think the challenge is how is it adopted at a senior level within a business?
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen it done well once. I've seen the category vision presented to a company conference totally cross-functionally.
Yeah.
And once everybody is on board with that vision, it then becomes part of everyday life and everyday operation. But I think that's a rarity,
yes.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, I can think of one particularly good example and really how the organisation delivered everyone within the organisation delivered. It was part of everybody's annual objectives. Mm. It was part of everybody's job description. Everybody had something that actually you could sort of track back to the category vision, be that only in marketing, you know, delivering NPD in line with what the growth opportunities are, the sales guys, you know, getting away something in store that actually was aligned to the maybe you have one of the drivers, it's usually there's an ease of shop or something something. Maybe the sales guys had to deliver tactics that delivered against the opportunities.
So all these tactics, all this money, all this effort, how do you know if it's working?
There should have been some growth objectives or some specific objectives defined as part of the category vision project. So, for example, if there is an opportunity to grow penetration or opportunity to increase frequency of purchase, then that will have been defined as part of the project, and that will have been driven by the insight that drove the project. So there will be a tangible scorecard that can then say, you know, one year in, two years in, is that being achieved? Is that a reality? And of course, it's important to say this is a category vision, not a company vision. So it may not be the manufacturer or the sponsor of this particular initiative that is necessarily benefiting from all of the growth. Mm-hmm. So it's important to be impartial and to measure the category benefit, not just your individual benefit.
Because a category vision really should grow the pie. So as a manufacturer, you probably want to grow your share, but actually a category vision is, as Neil says, it's about impartially growing the overall pie as opposed to your share.
If you're driving it and yeah. you're the motivator behind this category vision, you should benefit more than your competitors.
Yeah.
But that shouldn't be your objective,
yeah.
or that shouldn't be your stated objective.
Yeah. And going back to Neil's point about measurement, I mean, if you think about it, there's only three measurements that you can change, three shopper behaviours that you can change. You get people who don't buy currently to buy, you can get people to buy more of it, or you can get people to buy it more often. And there's nothing else you can do. So real clarity about what from what to what is each tactic going to deliver. Now, of course, that really becomes difficult because in amongst everything, there's masses of different activities that will be contributing to the different growth opportunities. So actually to being able to single-mindedly say this activity has delivered this change in behaviour is almost impossible. But really, the challenge for an organisation is to really genuinely only think in those three ways. Do I want more people? Will this activity deliver me more people more often, or get them to buy more? And if you're not thinking that way, actually it's a complete commercial tactic, because selling more product is not a good measure.
Yeah, and the vision and those measures will drive your tactics. So if a particular strategy is about growing penetration, and that's how you're going to deliver it, that will then drive shopper marketing and tactics that will bring more people into the category, rather than just, you know, so for instance, multi-buys would not support that, because yes. multi-buys usually appeal to people who already buy the category and who are persuaded to buy more. So the actual mechanics and the tactics will be driven by that.
And the other thing to say also is that, you know, and it's a really hard one to get embedded into organisations, is test and trial is really key. So there's quite often some of the tactics that you might identify are big and difficult, you know, BHAGs, big, hairy, audacious goals. And actually the only way to get it away in a retailer, and then for you as an organisation potentially to be prepared to invest in it, is actually to run some tests and trials in store. And for me, going around many organisations, and particularly looking, as we do and have done in several occasions, at organisational capabilities in delivering this area, one of the key things that is almost always missing is a preparedness to do test and trial. The only way that you're going to learn, and the only way that you're going to change significantly the fixture in store, is if you actually do some testing. And for me, it potentially doesn't cost a lot of money. And if it gives you the data and the insights to say that this is a good thing to do, I think that more manufacturers should particularly be thinking about including it.
I think I would point my finger a little bit more towards the retailer about not having supported that trial
yeah.
mentality
yeah,
of
yeah.
the last decade or so. I mean it used to be much easier to do it in store trials. It was relatively cheap.
Yeah.
Data was shared and analysed, and key learnings were taken out of it. I think the retailers have now, because of shop hours, because of the focus on shop floor costs, they've been much more reluctant to do that. And I think the disruptive effect of trials can often be put them off. But I think, I mean, hopefully now it feels that we're probably moving away from that now. Having gone through two Tesco range resets, I think now retailers are saying, there's a time that we can now settle down. We've looked at the range enough now. And there's an element of stability, I think, now in store.
And interestingly, just going off on a tangent, I mean, the Tesco reset showed that actually the blunt instrument of just pretty much delisting at whim almost potentially is not the way to go.
Not driven by cash grab vision.
Yeah, and not driven by an understanding of shoppers' needs and missions.
No, too blunt.
So who owns the category vision?
As I think we've said, it should be everybody within the commercial team and broader.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's I think there's a real need for everybody to understand that their role, whatever it is, delivers against the category vision. And in fact, going back to when I was an employee and actually owning the category vision per se, you know, the thing that we used to do, it was about using the category vision to challenge other parts of the organisation when they came up with concepts. So from a marketing perspective, when they were talking about NPD, you know, it was about identifying which growth opportunity that NPD was going to deliver against. And let's be honest, at the time it was tactical. There were we did things that were tactical because we needed to for other reasons.
That's fine, as long as you admit that and
absolutely.
You say this is in the tactical box.
Exactly.
You know, tomorrow we're going to talk about the vision and there's a separate set of things that we're doing.
Absolutely. And also the other thing which is interesting is that building on what Neil said earlier, you know, shopper understanding helps you to reflect significant differences in the tactics that you can use. So you can do a category vision and do tactics and then apply them and adapt them for different retailers. And actually having really good quality shopper understanding allows you to do that. And a very, very quick example that I would give from the past is having worked with the two retailers many years ago who were the largest, we identified that one retailer had great aisle penetration, so then the number of people who went and visited the category was really high. But actually when we got to the fixture, actually not that many people converted to purchase. Their main competitor at the time had really poor aisle penetration, but actually brilliant conversion at the fixture. And so what we were able to do was to completely adapt what we were doing because the tactics were different in each store. We knew that we had to, one, for some, get more traffic down the aisle for one, and the other one, it was about actually creating a greater conversion.
I think this could be one of the things that turns people off is having these five or six strategies, and for each one you might have five or six tactics. Having this enormous shopping list of things to do is really quite daunting if you then try and do it across all retailers. Yeah. But I think in practice you use that shopping list to then say, in this retailer we will focus on these two or three tactics which maybe cover one or two of the strategies because that's appropriate to that retailer.
What happens though if you're a small company?
You're operating in the same category, so the same category vision is valid and relevant.
Absolutely. And for smaller retailers, your role may be different, but you equally have a role to play because not all manufacturers can do all of everything for every growth opportunity. So there may be something that's to do with a specific product type that actually me as a manufacturer A doesn't have the capability of manufacturing, or it might be about the fact that some channels I'm really strong in and other segments or other manufacturers aren't. So the ability to adapt and for everybody to play a role is limitless. We just all, to an extent, have to identify what role we're going to play in which channels, but everybody in theory should be lined up with the same goal, but a different way of delivering it.
I think if you're a smaller company, you are by definition probably operating in a smaller segment or a subcategory or a certain part of the fixture or appealing to a certain shopper or focus on a particular retailer. So I think you will have your universe that you operate in where you can specialise, as Christine said.
The key thing for all manufacturers to understand is that this is not the preserve of only the big guys. Everybody can have a role to play. Everybody has got some insights and some knowledge that the overall category would benefit from. Really what you've got to do is identify where are your strengths and play to those strengths and actually ensure that your internal capabilities are aligned to where your strengths are.
Christine Edwards and Neil Hutton, thank you very much. That's all we have time for on this Big River Solutions podcast. If you would like to find out any more, please visit the Big River Solutions webpage, bigriversolutions.com. This has been a TDC production. I'm Nikki Lloyd-Williams and I hope you'll join us next time. Goodbye.